session number 24907, reel 8.
Charles Simpson, reel 8. You're just about to tell me that your next posting was to somewhere rather wonderful.
Yes. I received orders to proceed to Newcastle and to join a ship to be called later HMS Victorious, which was building in a shipyard on the Tyne. The only navy in Newcastle, with the two or three officers likewise joining the ship in the yard, and the few naval officers attached to the civilian staff of the yard. So to all intents and purposes, I had left the Navy behind, except that I was there to watch the building of a ship later to become one of His Majesty's ships.
Can you tell me when it was that you were sent to Newcastle?
Yes. Can we... I can tell you exactly. March 1941.
And where were you staying whilst the ship was being built?
I had to take lodgings in the town.
Were you billeted on somebody?
No. No, I had a little room and I had meals with the family who owned the house. This was much less expensive than staying in a hotel, because the living allowance, so-called, even for a warrant engineer officer, was very low, and I was trying to economise anyway. So since I was allowed a choice, I went to a private house and lived as almost as a member of the family.
And
of course, 1941, an ordinary house in Newcastle was subject to bombing like every other town in England. So I cowered in the shelter at night time. Did all the things that civilians did. Now, the dockyard men building the ship were not required to do any duties in connection with the ship at night time. So the three officers sent to the ship whilst it was building were obliged to do fire watch duties. So we slept on the deck of the office that we used during the daytime every third night. And we were then obliged three times a night in the darkness to go round this huge vessel, finding our way by torch, in order to look for any sabotage that might occur, to look for any signs of damage to the ship, especially to look out for fire. So every third night, whilst the ship was building, I did a fire watch in an empty aircraft carrier. It was very eerie. There were no lights because, of course, lights were of any kind were forbidden. There were no lights in the yard at night time. You found your way with a darkened torch. I found that, to begin with, quite, there's only one word, eerie. But after a few weeks, I got accustomed to it, went up and down the ladders, alone, in the darkness, making sure there was no danger being attached to the ship. And that lasted until half the ship's company came to join, by which time the ship was finished, all except for trials, and was afloat.
Were you there when she was launched?
Yes, I stayed in Victorious until the 22nd of April 1942.
Do you remember when she was officially launched?
No. It would have been done without publicity. As far as I recall, nobody came to launch it. I certainly didn't attend a launching ceremony, although, of course, I was on board when it was launched. Yes, I think, being wartime, there was no fuss and bother.
What was it like in Newcastle during wartime?
Oh, it was awful. It really was. It was winter time. It was the most severe winter they'd had, beyond most people's memory. There was 6 or 7 feet of snow in the streets. As a courtesy, I shoveled the snow out of the front of the house I was living in, and it was at least 4 feet deep. So we walked to and fro to the ship in deep snow for several days. It took a week to clear the streets.
Living as you did in a civilian house, were you subject to rationing in the same way?
Yes. We had a rationing allowance every time we went on leave, and this was regarded as being a leave period. And it was then brought up to the standard of civilian rations, which was something like a quarter of a pound of butter a week, a quarter of a pound of sugar, which I was obliged to hand to the lady who owned the house. She went off and got the rations.
Did you have better food on shore in wartime or on board?
Oh, in ships, we had normal peacetime rations. We had three-course dinners, and there was no difference between the living on board in wartime. The purpose was to keep morale at its highest, to ensure that our diet was at least up to pre-war standards. A perfect example, whilst at sea, we had white bread manufactured on board. This was because ordinary white flour could not be kept for a long period. I beg your pardon. The ersatz flour that civilians were using, a mixture of many low-grade flours, would not keep at sea. So the Royal Navy was allowed to keep white flour for the manufacture of bread and crusts for tarts and things, white bread. Likewise, our meals were within a shade of being the same as pre-war.
So was it? Did you feel the difference when you were on shore?
Oh, absolutely. When granted leave, you went back to civilian life. And I ate the same bread as civilians once a year. Doesn't this taste funny? And the first thing I did on arriving home, on any occasion, whether it was for a weekend or a week's leave, the first thing my mother required of me was my ration cards. And this was principally because rations for a weekend leave almost equaled a week's ration for a civilian. So, immediately on arriving, my mother was able to run to the nearest grocery shop, being short of sugar, and get her pound of sugar that was owing for me. Likewise, cheese and butter and other things that were on strict rationing. So I was welcomed home, partly because it was me and partly because I had a ration card.
Going back to your time in Newcastle, or should I say shortly afterwards, you were on the Victorious when she was launched.
Yes.
Did you serve on her for very much longer after that?
Yes. I left Victorious in April 42. So I was on board HMS Victorious 1 year. Including no, I joined Victorious in the shipyard in October 40.
So the mining of HMS Nelson would have taken place prior to that.
Yes. I'd left Nelson in Portland Dockyard. I never saw it again as a large ship or as a flagship. Yes, so October 40, I joined the ship building, HMS Victorious, and I leave it in April 42.
Once she was afloat, what sort of duties was HMS Victorious engaged in?
It had not become one of HM ships when it had its first action. We had done trials at sea with representatives of the shipyard on board with civilian fitters operating the machinery, showing us how it was done. So you had a fitter, civilian, on the ship's throttles with an artificer standing by his side, learning how to operate them, and in particular, how much to open them for a given movement of the engine. Okay. That occupied several months before the ship became a warship. Before it was commissioned, we were, and whilst we had half a dozen ancient swordfish aeroplanes on board for trial, we were ordered to sea to make an attack on the Bismarck.
Should add that HMS Victorious was an aircraft carrier.
Was an aircraft carrier, yes. Huge. One of the big ones. Brand new design. Something out of this world, as far as the Navy was concerned. Everything was new. It had three propellers. No other warship, to my knowledge, had three propellers. The machinery had to suit three propellers. So the engine department was enormous. And the responsibilities were not only for machinery down below, propelling machinery, auxiliary machinery, domestic machinery, it also included the flight deck. The engineers had the takeoff machinery to look after. So the engine department was huge. Off we went, still with civilians on board, and only half a dozen ancient swordfish on board, but with the necessary naval crew on board to fly them, and they were ordered to make an attack on the Bismarck. Which they did. The result was in great doubt. They thought they had hit the stern, but there was some doubt about it. There were only six or seven aircraft, and they were taking off in the dark for the very first time. But they came back hoping that they had damaged the stern of the ship. And it later proved that they had, not to any great extent, not enough to cause the Bismarck to retire, but enough to cause the steering to be, shall I say, defective.
That attack was by aircraft on the Bismarck. Did you actually see any of that happen from...
No. The engine department was clearly divided between those who had responsibility for below the flight deck and a modest part of the engine department that looked after the flight deck. A lieutenant engineer was responsible for the catapult, for example, which is an exceptionally important duty to perform. Any failure of the assisted takeoff gear would have meant an aircraft ditching or something of that nature.
Any other... Well... Did HMS Victoria see any other action whilst you were on board?
Yes. HMS Victoria was employed extensively on convoy duties.
Whereabouts?
Duties off the Norwegian coast. And one in particular has gone into the history books because our aircraft were ordered to take off and attack German ships at Narvik. They took off and were unable to report any hits due to weather conditions and the torturous nature of the fjords, because they had to go down almost to water level, the German ships hiding in the Norwegian fjords. So the aircraft captain was unable to assure of any hits, and he was ordered to fly off again a second time. And this time they were able to score some hits on the enemy warships.
What were conditions like up in the north?
Well, whenever aircraft took off, for whatever reason, the ship went to action stations. That ensured that every part of the ship was more than covered for whatever damage or duties were required. So it would be piped over the ship that in such and such a time so many aircraft would be taking off and later landing. And that was the signal for the entire engine room branch to go to its places of duty. In Victorious, as a warrant engineer, my duties were to look after the boiler rooms. So whenever aircraft took off, I went straight to one of the boiler rooms and then shared my time between the boiler rooms. I went from one to the other at regular intervals to make sure everything was okay. The men were up to their duty, that pressures and temperatures were correct, the fuel was flowing, that the burners were being operated to the right degree of intensity. So I saw nothing of aircraft flying or coming back. But of course, later on, we would gather in the warrant officers' mess, and there would be a considerable number of warrant officers whose duties were directly connected with aircraft or the flight deck. And we'd share experiences then. We'd hear from them about how many aircraft were able to take off, how many were defective in some way or other, how many had come back. But we had a very good idea, because in spite of being several decks below the flight deck, we could hear there were thumping noises of the assisted takeoff gear operating and of the aircraft leaving. So if you were sufficiently interested, you could count, like the man at the Falklands, who said we counted them out and we counted them back. And we'd hear the bump of the aircraft on the flight deck coming back, so we would know on any undertaking ashore how many had failed to come back.
What about the weather?
Weather did affect aircraft carriers, because there were conditions under which it was impossible or improbable to do take off or to come back.
This is the cold.
Yes. So undertakings could be abandoned, but that was very, very, very rarely. I can't recall any particular time in Victorious when that was not possible.
Being an aircraft carrier, was this the biggest engineering department you'd ever been involved in? Was this the biggest engineering department?
Oh, yes, twice as big. Twice as big. Certainly, as far as the ratings were concerned, we now had twice as many boiler rooms to man. And there are three men in every boiler room, a chief petty officer, a petty officer, and a stoker. They were called stokers then. Likewise, in all the machinery spaces, twice as many men as would have been in a battleship even. So, yes, the engine room department was huge.
Being a new ship, were living conditions improved?
Oh, not for officers, because the officers was pretty standard. A wardroom, a warrant officer's mess, cabins. No, I wouldn't have said any marked change. Wine allowance remained the same. Food remained the same. It was still served at the table. But, of course, there were odd hours. There were many occasions when going to action stations at what would have been a meal time, we either had makeshift meals, sandwiches, at our action station, or the meal time was delayed.
Were the hours odd because of the planes taking off, which necessitated the calling of action stations?
That was as required. From the moment it left harbour, the ship was at immediate notice. And it could be at 5 minutes' notice that you would be told aircraft will be taking off in 5 minutes' time.
And then you'd have to go to action.
And then you'd rush to your place of aircraft taking off station.
Is that the same as action stations?
Very much the same. By the time Victorious was launched, they had created a system not quite as good or well organised as the present damage control stations, but where engineer officers knew where to go and stokers knew what duties in shoring up and pumping out and quelling fires or dealing with bomb damage, it was very much better by the time Victorious commissioned than in the Nelson.
Was the Victorious ever hit or shelled? Did the Victorious ever come under attack when you were?
Not in the time that I was in it. Half my time was in building it. Probably 1/8 of it in doing trials, because they were extensive, as they included the flight deck. The action that I best remember, we had only just commissioned, so we were virtually a new ship, when we were ordered to join a convoy to Malta, and the purpose of which was to use the Victorious as a aircraft carrier, like a garage. We embarked as many aircraft as we could possibly get on board, and we steamed into the Mediterranean, and these aircraft took off to go to Malta. And this became one of the oft-told stories of the war. The convoy that relieved Malta halfway through the war. Our principal job was the aircraft, and we took on board not only naval personnel, but we took Air Force personnel, and the Air Force craft had to take off at their own risk, because they were not all suited to propelled takeoff. So it was a very, for those concerned, my duties didn't alter one jot, but for the flight deck, it must have been an extremely agonising time. I had to be open to the possibility of attack. But by luck or whatever, we were never actually attacked. Mind you, we had a fleet of other ships around us. The purpose of the convoy was to get the aircraft to Malta. So we were so surrounded by other warships, all firing their hundreds of guns, that the probability of the Victorious being directly approached was probably less than if we had been a battleship or a cruiser.
But are you saying that there were attacks on the convoy?
Oh, the other ships were. Oh, yes. But their purpose, and there were ever so many of them, their purpose was to get the Victorious to within flying distance of Malta. So it's probable, I've never made aware of the actual number, but it's probable we had dozens of different ships around us. And when attacked from the air, it was probable, though I never became aware of it because I was down below, it was probably were hundreds of guns protecting us.